This is Rod Peterson on demand. Oh, yeah, he's back. Time for more of the Rod Peterson Show.
We're back. Tuesday morning sports update. Travel day in the NBA Finals. The Raptors and Warriors are heading back to Oakland for Game 6 after the Warriors' dramatic 106-105 win last night in Toronto. The Raptors lead the best of seven series 3-2. Warriors lost star forward Kevin Durant with an Achilles injury last night. He was playing his first game in more than a month after suffering a calf injury earlier in the playoffs. The CFL season will start 1.5 hour earlier than expected. The Hamilton Tiger Cats announced today their home opener against the Rough Riders Thursday will now start at 5 p.m. Sask time instead of the originally planned 5:30. The team is doing so to try to avoid too long of a conflict with Game 6 of the NBA Finals. The Ticats will show the Raptors-Warriors game on their video scoreboard when the football game is over. And one more day until Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, the Boston Bruins will be on home ice for the winner-take-all showdown against the St. Louis Blues. It marks the first Game 7 in an NHL championship series since 2011 and the first ever in Boston. There's your Tuesday morning sports update. And Rob Vanstone joins us from the Regina Leader Post along with Derek Myers, the Duke. How are you doing, RV?
Fine, thank you. Thanks for having me. This is very cool. I didn't even know this part of the city existed. I've never been up here before.
Glad to have you up here. Yeah. You've been on board since, what, day one of this program? I appreciate your support.
I haven't missed one yet. So I'm kind of proud to be one of the originals. So,
do you listen on your bike rides around Wascana?
I listen to the podcast. Yeah. If I miss the original broadcast, I'll walk around the lake or have it playing on my little phone as I ride around. Tricycle.
We're proud to have you in too. And we had some sponsors yesterday. One in particular that I had lunch with, and he goes, "I'm getting in now." Because I see where this is going. It's exploding. So you'll be seeing his commercials soon in our commercial breaks there. But RV, I knew one of us would be at Jurassic Park last night.
At my age.
It was you.
I'm better fitted for Jurassic Park, having been born in a year that is...
You're a dinosaur.
DC, so.
The Cretaceous area.
I'm old.
How was it?
It was so cool. I got there around 8 o'clock. I had some work to do first. And my wife, as always, being punctual and on top of things, met me there, and she was texting me, telling me how cool it was. And then I got there and ruined it for her.
But sure.
It was one of the coolest things I've ever seen. Like, I'm 55 years old. I've been doing this for 33 years, and you think you've just about seen everything in Regina, right? Well, a basketball audience of five figures at Mosaic Stadium. I never thought I'd see a new stadium like this, let alone one with a video board that's bigger than a basketball court. And while all this is going on, Chris Getzlaff is playing flag football on the Mosaic Stadium field, and Matt Dominguez is coaching. And it's just like, this is one of the coolest things I've ever seen. People are just flocking to the stadium for something that has nothing to do with professional football. And it's one of the things that helps to validate the construction of the construction of the stadium. It provides opportunities that were once unfathomable.
And when were flash mobs a thing? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
No, I'm just saying when things would spontaneously just break out.
Spontaneously planned. I never was a fan of flash mobs because they were planned.
They were planned, but they weren't. I'm just saying
five, 10 years ago.
You can't put this stuff in a bottle and sell it. You can't. Who would think that 13,000 people would show up to watch a Raptors game on TV?
Yeah.
And kudos to Evraz Place for doing it, by the way, for making that available. I heard, Rob, because it's Regina, there's still going to be complaints that the lineups were too long, that. How do they know how many people were even going to show up?
Yeah, there's no precedent for this. There's no template. How could you even estimate how many people were going to be there? They got, I think, 2,500 at Civic Square Plaza for Game 4. But I think it's reasonable to attach an exponent to that figure when you're moving it to Mosaic Stadium. But 5,000, 6,000? I thought it'd be 6,000 or 7,000, maybe 5,000, but five digits. And what if the Raptors had been leading by a bunch and it looked like an inevitability that they would win the title? How many people would have been there by the end to share in the celebration? I think it would have been like the little miracle of Taylor Field in 63 when people just kept showing up and showing up and showing up. And by the end, there were twice as many people as were there at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Just lastly, before we get to the Rider talk, because that's why we brought Rob Vanstone in. Are you among those worried that the Raptors aren't going to win this thing since they let the Warriors wiggle off the hook in Game 5?
You really wonder, because you give them a life. You give Klay Thompson another 3 days for his hamstring to get a little bit better. And there's always the Steph Curry factor, and there's always the been there factor. Now, the Raptors have the advantage of having Kawhi Leonard, who's been a champion with San Antonio. But when you let the champion off the ropes, you wonder if that was your best chance. Now you're going back to Oakland for Game 6. And if it's Game 7, now the Warriors have shown that they can win even understaffed in Toronto. And I'm not a real big Raptors guy. I'm a Denver Nuggets fan. Andre Iguodala used to play for the Nuggets, so I don't mind the Warriors. I really love everything that Steve Kerr has to say about everything.
Yeah, he's
fantastic. Steph Curry is such a classy guy, so I it's cool. I won't live or die with the Raptors. I'm really kind of neutral on this one. I'm just enjoying the spectacle and enjoying the fun. You live for things like this when you do what I do for a living.
We'll never forget it. It certainly has a Blue Jays feel, right, from the early 90s. Steven in Calgary says, can the Raptors sue if they made concession revenue last night?
Huh.
Maybe they could, but they won't.
No.
I think the Raptors are making enough money as it is. I think the Raptors are just fine. But by the way, Steven's one of many guys, Rob, from a CFL market that's tuned in because they don't get CFL coverage in their markets. I'm hearing it from Winnipeg, Vancouver. We got a lot of viewers in Ontario. So we'll broaden this discussion here to all of the CFL. But I've said it many times in the last couple weeks. This is the first Rider training camp I've missed in 21 years. My go-to for information has been the Regina Leader Post.
Thank you.
Murray has been a warrior.
My go-to
a warrior.
As well. I wasn't there either, so.
Right, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
You know, all the outlets do a great job. But Murray's in there day in, day out, grinding. And maybe Murray's completely full of crap. I don't know. I'm just believing what he's telling me.
I haven't told him that since yesterday.
Right.
The McNuggets.
No, Murray, right. It's sometimes it's an unappreciated art what a beat guy has to do. Every day, day in, day out, sit through all sorts of practices and listen to all sorts of, however you want to categorize it, from coaches and players and what have you. And you do that for a long football season. And I mean, Rod, I don't have to tell you about it. I mean, you've covered hockey and football in the same season and had an interminable run of doing that. And you know the rigors of that with bus rides and everything. But it's a grind. And I couldn't do what Murray does. I wouldn't have the patience for it. I wouldn't have the stamina for it. And I really appreciate the kind words that you've had to say about him, because it's a cool job to cover sports, but every day pounding out the stories. It's a long, long marathon. And so thanks for the words of appreciation from Murray. I echo them.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, I can easily tell you this. Sunday morning, we were dealing with this health issue in my family, and I opened my Twitter and I saw somebody reporting something from Rider practice on Sunday. And I'm like, oh yeah, they're practicing. I don't miss being there. Like, it was 20 years. You know, it was fun.
Yeah.
But I have a lot of guys that have worked in the league for a long time, both hockey and football guys calling, and we're talking about stuff. And we're like, when you're doing it, it's a lot of fun. It's fast paced. Your blood's pumping, right? But when you're out, you're not in a rush to get back.
Well, I'll tell you the story from 2017, and you were much more eagle eyed than I was that day. Daron Carter got in a little dispute with Sam Williams, and I was covering practice that day, allegedly. But I was on my phone. I was Googling Cresden Butler because I wanted to do a feature on Cresden Butler, and he'd been all over the National Football League. So I was tracing the history of Cresden Butler, staring at my phone, totally impervious to the fact that there was a fight going on in the field. Well, you had a much better vantage point than I did. So had Murray been at practice, I think there was a pretty good chance that that fight would have been detected. In the meantime, I'm Cresden Butler Googling. So that gave me a real appreciation for what Murray does.
Well, when my book comes out on the Riders, that story will be in it. But I was told at the time when the Daron Carter fight broke out with Sam Williams, I was told not to report it. So I didn't. But I'll reporting. I'll be and I have photos.
Was it a good one?
It was a one punch fight.
I heard it was very.
Duran can fight.
Duran won very handily.
Duran ended it fast. I think Duran can do anything he wants to do in life.
Hurricane, you know, Carter for a minute.
Yeah, I think he's just scratching the surface on his potential, and I hope this year that he starts to find it with the BC Lions. And kudos, by the way, to Duran for coming on last week. And so today we've had Kevin Glenn asking to come on. Otha Foster, the BC Lions, will be on soon. Marcel Desjardins of the Ottawa Red Blacks scheduled to be with us on Friday.
When's Bo?
This is a lot.
No, Bo,
of,
yeah.
Bo Levi.
You got to get the campaign.
You know Bo has declined. Bo we're Levi we're, Mitchell
he'll be on
and Warren Wood have respectfully declined invitations to come on the Rod Peterson Show. So those two should interview each other.
You got to understand, though, this show airs right in Woodsy's prime golfing hours. I mean, nothing takes precedence over golfing.
Right. And Jamie Nye, I'm telling, Clark's telling me from the Green Zone has declined, but respectfully, because I don't think they're allowed to come on by their bosses. That's what I think it is. But anyways, RV, we're glad to have you here. So,
oh, this is great.
So through training camp and going into week one, and maybe we'll take a look at these other week one games here too, how are you feeling about the guys in the green hats, as Don Hewitt likes to call them?
Woods, by the way, is where Warren's ball, golf ball usually ends up.
Yeah. So that's how he got
I
the
had
name.
To get that in.
Tiger's cousin.
This has really been an interesting struggle this week because I've been trying to figure out where to put the Rough Riders in the predictions that I'm planning to run them in Thursday's best-selling edition of the Leader Post. And one day I have two, and one day I have five, and one day I have four. And what's starting to really dominate my 14 brain cells right now is that this is a team that won 12 games last year and had a home playoff game with virtually no offense and a dominant defense and good special teams. And it's easy to discount the Rough Riders because they have the same quarterback, pretty much the same contingent of receivers, the same offensive coordinator. Chris Jones is gone. But as I break it down, I look at this team facet by facet, and I think, okay, maybe the defense won't be as dominant as it was last season, but it's still going to be very good. You subtract Willie Jefferson, but you're adding Micah Johnson, who had more sacks than Willie Jefferson, and he was playing an interior defensive line position. It's tougher to get sacks there. Sam McGuavin's going to be tough to replace, but Calgary is trying to replace Alex Singleton. There's losses elsewhere in the or departures elsewhere in the division. So I look at this defense, and I still think you can put it in the upper tier in the Canadian Football League. You look at the offense, and it can't possibly help but improve upon what happened last year. They've put Zach Kolaros, I think, in a better position. They've got William Powell to anchor the ground game, and they've got a good offensive line, and it's year two in the scheme. So maybe the offense can be average. Well, if the offense can improve to even average, and I don't think that's an unrealistic expectation. If the defense can continue to be top tier, and if the special teams can continue to be good, which they should with Craig Dickinson, Brett Lowther is elite. John Ryan, I think, is going to be great. They have three guys who can take a kickback all the way for a touchdown. If you dissect this team, I think it actually has a chance to be a pretty good team.
Yeah.
Second or third. I initially was thinking, oh, fifth, they've got the same quarterback, same offensive coordinator, and you get caught up in belaboring the things that you belabored during football season. But as I look at it, hey, they were 12-6 last year, and there's really not a lot of huge change to the roster. Derek?
My only concern, and I don't even know if it's a concern, is, and the defense is so critical with this team. And you mentioned the personnel. What is the drop off from Chris Jones to Jason Shivers? I know he's been groomed. It's virtually the same system. I think Jeremy O'Day, I was reading a column where you guys had sat down with Jeremy O'Day today in the Leader Post, yourself and Murray McCormick.
4,700 words of transcribing, but
I did.
My fingers are shorter now.
I read it at breakfast this morning, and the thing he basically said is it's going to be the same scheme, but the play calling may be different under Jason Shivers. That's just my only, and it's because it's unknown.
Yeah.
It's not a discredit to I just don't know. And as I mentioned earlier, when you kind of have the Jedi Master of defense and setting up schemes to neutralize other teams, when he leaves, is Obi-Wan Kenobi going to be as good? You know, I'm a Star Wars geek, but that's kind of how I feel about it. And to me, it's kind of a to be determined. I don't want to put that on Jason Shivers and say he's not going to be as good because I don't know that. But it's the I don't know factor because they were so good last year.
Yeah.
So good. And that's why I can't give them, in my gut, number one. But because they were historically good and the changeover in personnel hasn't been that much, that's why I can't put them at number five either. So I'm kind of waffling in that 2-3-4 spot. I think I will probably settle on three.
Rob, I read your column about the Riders pursuing Bo Levi Mitchell here in free agency. And that's today's edition, right? I read it online, but that is in today?
I think I alluded to it. I've mentioned that about 14,000 times since February.
So my question, and we got a lot of Stamps fans viewing here today and probably listening to, what do you know about the pursuit of Bo Levi Mitchell? Were they even close at all? I mean, and the reason I say that is Jeremy O'Day and Craig Dickinson are very smart guys. They understand the importance of the quarterback position. That's why they threw the boat at Bo Levi, right? That's why they backed up the Brinks truck for Bo Levi. And for whatever reason, he wasn't interested. We know the importance of the position because week one of 2015, Darian's Achilles is blown and the season's gone. I do an after dinner story on the rubber chicken circuit about that. Like, I'm driving home, my wife and her inebriated friends from that game, and I've my grip on the steering wheel, I've like bent the steering wheel. I was so upset, and they're like, Rod, you don't seem very happy, these voices from the back seat. And I'm like, the season is over.
And it started.
And it just, I knew the season was done.
And Shea Emery was already hurt by then.
Shea Emery was hurt too. So I don't know if the roster was flimsy then, why you couldn't recover from a week one injury. I don't know. I've moved on. But here we are. And if Zach goes down in week one, this season is over. Mm. Is it not?
You could say that across the division, though.
But I only care about this team. And I asked you about Bo, I guess, so let's start there. How much do you know about, were they even close?
I think they were very close. I think he was very tempted. And I think at one point there were people in the middle of negotiations who thought, you know, he's going to go to Saskatchewan. I think it was that close where there was, at some point, Calgary was thinking, we've got to really up the ante here because he's going to go and play for Saskatchewan. I mean, I think it's as close as you could get without getting him. There's all sorts of different versions, but he was certainly tempted, certainly enticed, and was certainly listening, and which is something when you consider how he's been entrenched in Calgary and what he's done there. It must have been a tremendous offer from the Rough Riders to even have him thinking about it. And you wonder about the possibilities. As big as Bo Levi Mitchell is in Calgary, how big could he have been here? Because you've got all sorts of corporations, and he could have owned the province instantly.
He's absolutely a marketing dream. You know, in my opinion, he's a marketing dream.
You know, you're Bo Levi Mitchell in Calgary, but there's also Johnny Hockey, and there's also any number of Flames who are going to be a bigger deal. But in Saskatchewan, I just wonder what kind of package, if there was any package that they put forward to him that made him think there could be ancillary revenues here that could take the football salary and perhaps double it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at the things you do during the offseason. Look at all the dinners you go to. Now, what if Bo Levi Mitchell was going to all those things?
Very lucrative.
It could have been a gold mine.
I think Darian, it goes from capital. Like,
I think
all those
Darian
things.
Durant, in his peak, was getting $7,500 a speaking event with the Rough Riders. Wow. I mean, he wouldn't get that now, but Bo Levi absolutely would get that. So, yeah, you can tack that on to whatever your salary is as the starting quarterback for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. Now, what I know more than at this point I'm prepared to say about the Bo Levi talks here with the Rough Riders. Maybe that'll go in my Rider book one day. But I don't. The Riders threw such a overwhelming offer at him that they were shocked, A, that he didn't take it, and B, that Calgary matched it.
So was it dollars and cents? To the best of your guys' knowledge, why did he stay in Calgary?
For the most part, well, Calgary matched. And a good tease here is Wally Buono, the interview that we're going to be airing Friday night. It'll drop from our website and our Facebook page, The Rod Peterson Show, the Wally Buono interview. It's Wally like you've never seen him. But he talked about Bo Levi's leadership abilities, and he's just watched Bo. He's never coached him. But he puts him in the Doug Flutie vein of leadership. Not ability. His ability is obviously great, but his leadership abilities. And Wally says in that interview, I think Calgary was really sweating because their whole franchise's fortunes are tied to that guy. So that's why they paid it. So back to the Rough Riders, I believe they were stunned that they didn't sign Bo. Because they gave him, you know, everything they could possibly could, and he turned it down. That's what they wanted to have. And so, but they signed Zach. Zach was the safety valve. But, you know, how durable is Zach? Do you think Zach is, I mean, you've been down to some of the scrums, have you not? Is he bothered by the fact that people think that he can't finish a season?
I haven't been in any scrums with him, but I think any kind of when I have talked with him, I think any kind of skepticism or any kind of doubt seems to rankle him, as it would anybody else. I remember, you know, Darian Durant, for example, was fueled by the skeptics and fueled by the doubters, and they ultimately, I think, worked in his favor because he was so determined to prove everybody wrong. And I think there's that little bit of a fire burning in Zach Collaros where he'd like to demonstrate that he still got it, and then he'd like to shut some people up or at least alter what they're typing.
I will say, it's funny you mentioned and Durant and how that came full circle. I mean, he never seem to win over the confidence of people, no matter, you know, 2009 goes to the Grey Cup, that had it in the bag, 10. But when he won in 13, and his comments directly after that, and he was a different, I will always contest the BC game was, that's one of the great performances I've seen by a player. And him letting it out after the game, saying, you know, I was pissed off and it was time to show people. If Zach Collaros can use the similar doubt, his about health, maybe not so much ability, but to fuel him in a way that Durant did, even half as much, I think would be a very,
but
very
positive
step.
There's a big difference there. There's a really big difference there.
And everybody's a different individual.
People didn't think Darian could do what he did, and that's lead this team to a Grey Cup, and that was his fuel. Let's just say Zach's upset at anything that I'm saying. Let's just take my opinion. I believe Zach can do it. But he was a blocking to the back penalty away from winning the Grey Cup in 2014 with the Hamilton tie. I believe he can do it. I don't believe he can stay on the field.
Which, but it's
big
the same
difference.
Well, it's
no, it's
different,
not,
but
not
same.
Even close.
Different but same. You're doubting his ability. Not his ability, but just to be there. You're Darian can't win it. Zach can't stay healthy. You're doubting him. It's just a straight doubt in my mind. You know, and yeah, I have questions, but lots of us do. But he has to view it as somebody's doubting him, whether it's ability, whether it's, you know, health. I'm going to prove them wrong. That's what Darian used.
That's the
used.
Tom Brady that's, thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But that's the thing with Zach is last year, because I was such a Chris Jones fan, he rolled the dice bringing Zach in, given his concussion history. And I was all aboard. I was all in. But when he couldn't play in the playoffs because of concussions, I'm like, I'm now all out. Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me twice, shame on me. And I'm not. And for Zach's case, I hope that he stays in there. I don't see it happening. They're telling me we have to take a timeout. More coming up with Rob Vanstone. Get the face. If you got questions for the legendary RV, please send them in right now. It's your chance to talk to Rob Vanstone here this morning on The Rod Peterson Show on Facebook Live and rodpeterson.com.
One of the things that I'm also running into lately people who have been declined for marijuana use in the past.
Brian Baker with youareinsurable.ca.
Insurers will decline you for more than just your health. They'll decline you for your lifestyle. And in the past, any type of marijuana use over 2 grams a week is going to send red flags up to traditional insurers, because for those people who are suffering from chronic pain, other illnesses such as Crohn's colitis or depression for that matter that have used marijuana as a treatment, they're probably using more than a couple of grams a week. Now we have legalized marijuana in the country, but don't expect the traditional insurers to have made that change to their underwriting policy. But I do have an insurer that will take care of the client.
If you've been declined due to cannabis, you are still insurable. Don't wait. Talk to Brian today. Brian specializes in finding critical illness, life, and disability insurance for hard-to-insure people just like you. Book your no-cost, confidential, risk-free consultation at youareinsurable.ca.
Locally owned and family operated, Emerald Water, refreshing the Rod Peterson Show. From reverse osmosis to natural alkaline and distilled water, they are perfect for your home and office. Saskatchewan's number one source for commercial alkaline with natural electrolytes and minerals that are better for your body. Naturally occurring magnesium, calcium, bicarbonate, and potassium are amazing for your health. Trust 30 years of experience and drink water that matters from Emerald Water.
Demand. Head to rodpeterson.com to access all of the content you may have missed or want to hear again. Now, back to the studio with Rod.
We continue. Rob Vanstone in studio and Darren DuPont has slid back in. So we've got some messages have come in on the Facebook feed that our audio version is down today. That's because we've had twice as many listeners try to get on and crash the server for a second straight day. Clark's telling me in my ear that it should be back up and operating. So if you want to try it at rodpeterson.com/listen live, you can. DuPont?
Yeah, I will. I'll tell you that. Yeah, when you're listening live, click it. It takes about 5 to 10 seconds to get started. So don't click it a bunch of times waiting for it to get started.
Okay. And by the way, we have our 19 viewers from Norway tuned in. Well, they're listeners, I think, actually. We're huge in Norway. 19 people every day listening from Norway. Can you please identify yourselves?
What about Norquay?
Norquay. Well, we have one.
Yes.
From Chris Cherowick, K-Dog. And I told you I know somebody from every town in this province.
Turtleford. Give me a Turtleford resident.
Stop. Stop it.
Mike.
Sports update. 2019 CFL season will start 30 minutes earlier than expected, thanks to the Toronto Raptors. Thursday's game between the Ticats and Rough Riders will begin at 5 p.m. Sask time instead of the regularly scheduled 5:30 p.m. In an effort to avoid overlap with Game 6 of the NBA Finals, the Raptors will be on the road at Golden State with a chance to claim their first championship. The Blue Jays kick off a six-game road swing tonight in Baltimore. Against the Orioles, the American League East rivals will play three games before the Jays travel to Houston for another three-game set. Toronto will send Trent Thornton to the mound while the O's counter with John Means. And former Red Sox slugger David Ortiz is recovering in Boston from a two-hour exploratory surgery after being shot at a bar in his native Dominican Republic. Ortiz spokesman Leo Lopez tells the Associated Press that Ortiz is expected to stay in intensive care for at least 48 hours. Rob Vanstone with us. We're talking CFL. Darren DuPont, you've enjoyed the program so far. What do you got for RV? Why don't you take over for a minute? Anything?
Well, the program. I'm trying to wreck it here.
I know, yeah. Right? I snuck back in, was doing taking care of a little business too, so I wasn't listening to the last little bit. I did pick up a bit on the podcast. I want to know more about the book. I don't know how much you got into the book before.
We didn't at all.
Rods are mine.
Well, I saw it on your Twitter feed because you had the manuscript and it looked, there it is, on the Facebook
yes.
feed. So impressive. 100 things.
100 chins. Sorry.
No, that's what we love. 100 things every Rider fan must do right before they die. And you brought in the Winnipeg Jets book, which you have.
It's sort of a prototype of what I'm doing. Go Jets. I also have a Denver Broncos one at home, but it's really a cool little project. It's just... Basically, I'd carte blanche on what I wanted to write about. Just pick 100 topics and go into them. I interviewed Rod for the book. In fact, one of the chapters is entitled Go Crazy Saskatchewan.
Well, thank you.
It's about the 2007 Grey Cup, and that was your signature call from that game.
Appreciate that.
So thanks for your help with the book. It was really fun. I went into it just with a total just blank slate. Anything I wanted to write about. And chapters 1 through 100 and all sorts of little sidebars. And one of the cool things was... wrapping the chapters around the numbers, uniform numbers. Chapter 17 is Joey Walters. Chapter 18, just for you.
Jeff Fairholm, my favorite.
Fairholm, and et cetera, et cetera. 23, 34, there's some obvious ones there. And just telling their stories and some backstories and some quirky little things, starting with the Regina Rugby Club in 1910 and going right through to, actually, I had it done. It was about ready to, they were about ready to send me the manuscript, and the Rough Rider signed John Ryan.
So gotta change
it
all.
I was able to get the John Ryan chapter in there. So there's
if I may, is chapter one Henry Burris?
Chapter
one. Or Ladoffius, the Sandman McCullough.
There is a Henry Burris chapter. The first 10 or 20, I kind of did them in order of perceived historical importance. So I thought the 2013 Grey Cup, that when you consider what happened, not only winning a Grey Cup, but doing it at home, the last opportunity to win one at Taylor Field. And Darian Durant told me a really cool story for that one. Maybe I shouldn't give it away here, but you're nice enough to discuss the book with me. After the game, and you would probably know this already, Darian did what he had to do and partied with, you know, and celebrated with his teammates. Then he went home, got changed, and basically threw himself in the midst of the mob on the Green Mile and celebrated with the fans. Not look at me, but really inobtrusively. He just wanted to be part of
wow.
this. Where else would that happen?
Nowhere.
And Darian was so generous in telling me that story, and it just to me, it just set the tone for the whole book, and I put that in the first chapter and thought, this is really cool.
So the book's full of those things.
It's full of those just little quirky things. I'm a bit of a wonk and a bit of a nerd, and I love little tangential or obscure references, so I threw all sorts of little trivialities in there and had...
Are there some vacillations in there?
I don't know if I got that word in there.
I hope you
but
did.
But I'm going to have to insert it on my final proof of the manuscript.
Hey, I don't even know what a vacillation is. What is a vacillation? It sounds dirty to me.
The vacillation was, okay, I'm going to pick the Rough Riders for second. No, I'm going to pick them for fifth. Second, fifth, second, fifth. And I've been vacillating.
Not being able to make a decision.
Okay. To me, I thought it was what you did in Swift Current. That's what I was,
Vaseline. They still talk about Vaseline. That there. By the way, just Green Mile... On the Facebook feed, let us. What did you do after the Riders won the Grey Cup in 2013? I went to Earl's with my family, but I don't like crowds. I don't like mobs, and it was killing my wife to be there because she wanted to be on the Green Mile. I just remember the police report that came out the next day, because if you remember that ill-fated season of 2013, which I guess it didn't end that way, but I got on the Regina Police Service news release list because of the Riders were being charged and appearing in court during that season. So the next morning, the Monday morning, some guy got arrested for exposing himself on the Green Mile. And I thought to myself, I've been very excited over the years for various things. I've never thought to drop my pants in celebration. And this guy did. So, was it you?
No, but I guess it in one form it was an exhibition game. Or exhibitionist game? How do you...
right. Ta-da-da.
Sorry.
Where were you, Green Mile, or like the night that were you on the Green Mile?
Yeah, we were on the Green Mile. Me and my brother actually watched the game. It was really a cool experience. So we did the Green Mile, which was incredible. You shut down Albert Street in Dewdney because the fans were all over the street and cars were trying to push their way through to get out of there. And
good luck.
Then we went down Dewdney and went to a couple of places and had a good night. And it was so much fun. So much fun.
That was actually one of the chapters in the book was, well, by the way, Tom Hanks was in Regina that day. And that was one of the really cool things, because I actually got a chance to pop a couple of questions to Tom Hanks
in
the TSN
special.
Booth. And that moment during the game where he's wearing the Tiger Cats hat or what have you, and the crowd
Martin
starts
Short ripped it off
objecting, and on goes the Rider hat. I mean, it was just, that was such a magical day. Before the game even started, before the Riders are playing in a Grey Cup at home, Tom Hanks is in Regina. What a day that was. It's just
so special.
So amazing.
People writing in. Amber says she was on the Green Mile. Dave Spatafora, I hope I'm saying that right, says he walked home after the game. On the way, hung out at Albert Street and Victoria Avenue for about an hour. So you did go to the Green Mile. So we love the fan viewer participation of this program. Write us on the Facebook feed, please. We'd love to know and tell the world what you did after the Riders won the 2013 Grey Cup. Anthony, Mom and I went to the Green Mile, and we were just having the best time hugging strangers and cheering until we couldn't speak anymore. Yeah, those are the types of things that bring families together. There's no doubt about that. But you know, Rob, we've heard from these fans from other CFL centers how they just don't have what the Riders have. I I don't think anything's a lost cause or a losing cause, but it's not looking up in Toronto or Montreal or some of these places. Like, and I don't want to believe the CFL's in trouble either. I don't. But what do you think it's going to take? And I'm not sure you and I are even qualified to talk about it. I've lived here for 45 out of my 46 years. I can't talk about what they want in Vancouver or Toronto. Shows like this would probably help. But what's your take on the state of the CFL right now?
It's tough, too, when you look at the state of the media, and there just aren't as many people reporting on the Canadian Football League. So what used to be a pretty conventional source of CFL information is no longer there in terms of the volume that once existed. I don't think that helps. I'm not just talking about newspapers, but I think the media overall, as the CFL tries to get bigger, there's fewer people to spread the word, at least in a conventional sense. I think production such as this helped to fill some of that void that has been increasing. I just wonder if there's ever going to be a solution, but I don't think the lack of a solution necessarily is a bad sort of portends doom for the Canadian Football League. How long have we been talking about the Argos woes? They couldn't make a big splash when they had Doug Flutie winning a Grey Cup championship there. There was a brief spasm when they had Rocket Ismail in 1991.
That might have had as much to do with the owners, though.
Yeah, John
Gretzky, Candy, and McNaugh. You've seen the documentaries. They were getting 52,000 fans a game in Toronto. That happened.
Yeah, the Blues Brothers and all sorts of cool things going on then. But it's been a generation since people were into that at all. BC is always going to be a struggle. Montreal post-Cavillo is going to be a struggle. I think the league is very fortunate that they've had benevolent owners who've been willing to absorb some losses. You look at the amount of money that Bob Wettenhall's lost in recent years. Toronto, you're not going to make money there, I don't think, on the Argonauts as an entity. Look at the losses that Bob Young has incurred. You look at David Brayley and the financial sacrifices he's made for the league. As long as there's people that are willing to say, okay, I'm going to write off a few million dollars here in order to have this franchise, the league's going to be okay. But the only concern I have is that what if one day everybody woke up and said, you know, I need to be able to make a profit on this, or at least not bathe in red ink. What if the profit became the imperative across the league? Then there's huge problems. But I think people are sort of comfortable with, okay, I'm not going to get rich doing this, but it's kind of cool and it's kind of fun.
The report I saw out of Montreal this morning is that the Eric Lapointe ownership group is the last one left standing in order to buy the Alouettes. So you got a football guy there with a ownership group that's got the money. I think it might be the perfect thing for the Montreal Alouettes. Although, we can talk about this on the other side. Clark's telling me we have to take a commercial as we head into overtime after this break. But the best thing for the Alouettes probably would be for the Molson family to buy them, i.e. the Montreal Canadiens. That's what's going on in Toronto. That's what's gone on in Calgary. I'm not sure that's the best thing for sports in those cities, because there's some collusion goes along with staffing and that types of things. But that might be the best thing for the Alouettes. Lots to talk about. You got questions for us, fire them at us on the Facebook feed. Oh, and by the way, our Twitter poll, I should check the latest from our Twitter feed, at Rod Peterson Show. It is it weird to wear a Rider jersey to games where the Riders aren't playing? My vote would be no. 55% say no, it's not weird to wear a Rider game to games where the Riders aren't playing. Did you watch the Raptors game 5 last night? Those two silver-haired dudes in row 3? You're going to stick out, but maybe that's what you want. Rod Peterson Show continues after this break on Facebook Live and rodpeterson.com.
Covering everything that matters to you. It's the Rod Peterson Show. Tune in live Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to noon, to catch the show live and be a part of the action. Take control by commenting live and sharing the show with your friends.
If you're looking for radio that's got a great message, well, we've got it. LTD Radio plays the best of the 60s to the 90s, all with amazing stories about people right from your community. You can listen live right now at ltdradio.com, iTunes, Streama, and TuneIn. LTD Radio, music to build a better day.
Did you know you can catch all the best moments from the show on all our social media platforms? Now, back to the studio with Rob.
Show continues. We head into overtime. Sports update coming up in a moment. So many people are asking us, who's that voice guy on the Rod Peterson Show? Rick Regan's his name. Do you want to handle it, Dupes?
We might have to get him on the show.
He loves the show.
Rick, if you're He's watching, great. we're gonna have to fly you down to the studio, maybe, or at least get you on the video call, which is cool.
Not only does he voice the show, he watches the show. He loves it, and he thinks that I'm picking on Bo. I'm not picking on Bo. He's following this Bo Levi situation with the Rod Peterson Show very closely, however. Would I be right in saying that?
Yep. We're going to have to find the clip. And explain the story to him of what's the pick six.
Right.
That one was good.
I was intrigued because I asked about the voice guy during the break because I sort of had it in my head. Okay, what does this guy look like? I don't know if old style wrestling fans remember Dick the Bruiser. And I thought, that voice sort of looks like a Dick the Bruiser category. Or there used to be a cartoon character named Bub Slug. Remember Bub Slug? And I thought, God, am I old. And I thought, it's either Dick the Bruiser or Bub Slug, and the picture of him didn't look at all like
it. Looks like Kenny Powers.
Yeah.
A lot like Kenny Powers, if you watch Eastbound and Down. I don't know if you do or not. Sports update this morning. The Raptors will have to wait to win their first NBA title in franchise history. Steph Curry had 31 points, while Klay Thompson finished with 26, and the visiting Golden State Warriors edged Toronto 106-105 to slice the Warriors' lead in the NBA Finals to 3-2. Game 6 is at Oracle Arena on Thursday. Warriors All-Star Kevin Durant will have an MRI today to determine the severity of an Achilles injury he suffered in Game 5 of the Finals last night. He returned to the lineup against the Raptors after missing a month with a calf injury. So Toronto fans cheered when he got hurt. And you see that the Golden State players are calling Toronto fans trash and this and that. Are we surprised, guys? I want to get your take on people doing that. Newsflash, people are stupid. Society's stupid. So I'm not surprised that they did it. Don't be a stupid person. Have a little class when you're conducting yourself out there on a daily basis. Your guys' thoughts on that last night?
It's reprehensible. I loved the fact that Kyle Lowry was among the players who said, look, instantly his gestures were instantly those of disapproval. It was horrible that people would respond that way. But I guess that's people, and you see the worst side of humanity sometimes when you're dealing with sports. And it's a fraction of the amount of people that are following it, but sometimes they get the notoriety or the attention. Look at social media. One troll sometimes can command more attention than 99% of the people who are tweeting or what have you knowledgeably and compassionately. And that was the antithesis of that last night. But it happens. I remember when Michael Irvin got injured and there were fans, I think it was in Philadelphia, Washington, wherever Michael Irvin got hurt, and people were cheering that Michael Irvin was hurt. And it's like, why? Honestly. But
Winnipeg, Darren Durant, 2014 Banjo Bowl.
That happened.
Never
there
forget
too?
It. Oh, yeah, they cheered when he got
goodness.
Hurt. Oh, however, Winnipeg, ooh, you can be forgiven. We're big in Winnipeg, you know. You know that.
Yeah.
Go Jets.
Nobody, no quarterback in CFL history has beaten the Winnipeg Blue Bombers more as a franchise than Darien Durant. You can look that up in your book. That was in the CFL game notes somewhere along the line. Even more than Lancaster ever did, Darien Durant has beaten Winnipeg more than any. And by the way, because if you know Darien, you love him. Right, Rob?
Terrific,
he's one of the most engaging, intelligent, warm people. I don't know why people were on his back. And if they hate him in Winnipeg, he'd be fine with that. I don't mind being hated in Winnipeg either. We don't like you in Winnipeg. So I just remember one banjo bowl where Darien was on the end of the bench. It was in the old stadium, and he's waving at fans because riders were kicking their ass, and fans were leaving, and Darien's waving bye to them as they're leaving the stadium, yelling at him, waving his towel. That's what makes sports fun, by the way.
Yes.
The problem is just when you leave the stadium and your car's vandalized or something, you know, by some crazed fan. I don't know, but somebody was, well, I don't want to say who his name is, but somebody close to me was saying how Brandon Bridge reminded him of Darien Durant. And I said, what are you talking about? I know. And he goes, well, Brandon Bridge all wild-eyed when he comes up to the line of scrimmage out of the huddle. I said, Darien wasn't. Darien's a Hall of Fame quarterback. What's wrong with people? And to this day, Darien Durant has the highest completion percentage in CFL playoff history.
What he did in the 2013 playoffs, not just against BC, but going into Calgary and winning 35-13, then throwing three touchdown passes in a Grey Cup. In the 2013 playoffs, he threw eight touchdown passes, no interceptions, and look at the game he had running the ball against the BC Lions. I mean, that was amazing. Corey Sheets was a Grey Cup MVP. Amazing interview, by the way.
Thank you.
But honestly, Darien Durant carrying that team, and Derek mentioned it earlier, and Darien Durant carrying that team for most of the time that he was the starter. He was so unappreciated, and oddly enough, you referenced the Banjo Bowl when Darien got hurt, and as everything he accomplished leading up to that, I don't think people really realized how valuable he was until he wasn't there, and then an 8-2 season goes up in flames, and that's
literally
where you find out how important Darien Durant was. And I love the fact that Darien came here, loved it, reveled in it, and basically became an honorary Saskatchewanian. Even if people were carping at him and criticizing him, he was the face of the franchise. He knew it, he embraced it, and he was proud of it, and he loved it.
Yeah,
and
really loved being here, right?
He really loved it, and it was very sad that the way it ended here, but with time passing, I think people are going to remember the great things about Darien Durant, and that the legacy is going to be so powerful and so enduring, and that's the way it should be.
Well, I think it already is, but why have people not gravitated towards Zach Collaros? Because they haven't. And it's not arguable whether they love Zach or not. They don't. Has he not been here long enough? Has he not won enough? I mean, I love him. He's a great guy. And I think he's a great quarterback. Why do we not see Collaros jerseys? Why are there more John Ryan jerseys? Well, that's obvious because he's from here, but why are there not more Collaros jerseys on the streets?
Well, 9 touchdown passes versus 13 interceptions. He had a 10-4 record as a starter last year, but I think that was largely on the back of a dominating defense. He hasn't had that kind of marquee season. What we will never know, and what still intrigues me, is Zach Collaros goes into Calgary last year and plays his finest game as a Rough Rider, wins it. Tremendous game. It's one of those games that I think could have been a springboard to success in the playoffs. Then he gets hurt. Riders lose to Winnipeg in the playoffs. Doesn't get a chance to go back to Calgary. And there's a huge what if with me. What if Zach Collaros had been able to go to Calgary a second time? If Zach Collaros is playing in that game against Winnipeg, Riders win it. Naaman Roosevelt's open for two touchdowns.
Preach it.
And one of the passes hits an upright. Zach Collaros is in that game. The Riders win it, there's no doubt. And then he gets to go to Calgary again. And then suddenly, is there a massive groundswell of support for Zach Collaros? He never got that chance. Now he has another opportunity. Now he's got to stay healthy, and they've got to keep him healthy at all costs.
I hope he jams it up everybody's butt and stays on the field, plays 18 games, and wins the Grey Cup. That's what I want. I want the Riders to win. There's no two ways about it. I just can't see him staying on the field. Couldn't do it last year. Was willing to wait with a gamble. I just don't see it happening this year. By the way, I was going through these notes the other day. The Riders beat Calgary 2 out of 3 times last year in the regular season. That is the Grey Cup champions. They beat them 2 out of 3 times, as you said, including in their house. What's to say they couldn't have gone there in the West Final and beat them? And then gone on to the Grey Cup and mollywhopped the Ottawa Red Blacks. That's how close the Riders were with the McAdoo offense. Did we get into that? That it's too maligned? How do you feel about the offense? You want explosions, and you want big plays and big points.
You're a big fan of the swing pass,
and the hitch screen. Vacillating? This season, it's almost like the best 2 out of 3 falls. 2017, the Riders led the league in touchdown passes with 35, and there wasn't a lot of even chatter about Stephen McAdoo, period. It was a very productive offense. Last year, well, people saw it, but they also saw a quarterbacking situation that wasn't as good by and large, and they also saw a receiving core that was nowhere near what it was the year before. And it was a depleted offense. And is that Stephen McAdoo or is that just personnel? Now you've got William Powell. Now you've got a group of receivers who are now sophomores. Maybe Matty Arsenault can step in. Maybe KD Cannon can be a factor. Maybe suddenly there are some pieces that Stephen McAdoo can use and perhaps create, at least evoke some memories of 2017 as opposed to 2018. I want to see this Stephen McAdoo offense without Chris Jones here. I'm curious about the Rough Riders without Chris Jones. Will the defense be as good without him as a coordinator? Probably not. But does this in any way liberate the offense? Does the fact that the Rough Riders have brought in William Powell create opportunities for that offense that didn't exist last year when it was Trey Mason?
Powell sure looked good in the preseason the other night, didn't he?
Tremendous.
Almost unstoppable. Yeah. Dallas writes in, did you guys talk about the Lenkov group in terms of the Alouettes ownership situation? No, we have not. So the two things I've seen this morning are this Lenkov group from California. That's one tweet that I saw. And the other is that Eric Lapointe's ownership. That's what we did talk about. Dallas is Eric Lapointe, the former Alouette, the Canadian Football Hall of Famer, that it's his group that will be buying the Alouettes. Is that the same group? I don't know if they're the same group, but I'm of the belief that it will be the Lapointe group. The ones that started all this will be the ones that end it and own the Montreal Alouettes. And that's what I think, Rob, is going to be needed, is local ownership from a football guy that knows what he's doing. It'll be the perfect thing.
And one that is respected. You look at when the Alouettes were achieving success in their current incarnation, and their best period was when Larry Smith was running the team. But Larry Smith was so invested in that community and so recognizable and such an asset to the team. If they have people who can make the same inroads or have made the same inroads that Larry Smith had made, was able to make, maybe that helps them. You know, football is so big in Quebec. There's an opportunity there. I think there's an upside there that doesn't exist in Toronto. But they've got to get the on-field product in order, too. And that is a massive concern there. I mean, Dan Hawkins was a longtime Montreal head coach compared to
what happened. He fired at 2-5, wasn't he? Seven games in?
At least he made it beyond training camp. This is you've got disruption at this juncture of the season. How can that possibly be a winning formula?
But we did talk about this earlier in the week with, you know, people who were, you know, watching their bench in the preseason and the tension that was there, and it looked like there was going to be a revolt on the Montreal, you know, in their lineup and on their sideline. And now with Mike Sherman gone, people saying that they really have a chance now to maybe start winning some games. But
sure,
if they've got a quarterback who can win some games,
we'll see. But I mean, things rarely get better. I don't think it's all about the coach. It's about the players. They don't have a good enough team. That's it. And by the way, if there was almost a mutiny last year, why would you think that if you brought Sherman back, that would change? So why do you got to wait till 7 days before the first game before you fire the head coach? Which we got into the rant yesterday, which is now making its way through Quebec. But what I think people don't understand is the love of CFL football in Montreal. Quebec as a province, but for sure in Montreal. Larry, well, all those great names there. Sam the Rifle Echeverry is a huge name. Who are some of the big Montreal Alouettes names?
Johnny Rogers, Hal Patterson.
Peter Della Riva. That's the one I'm thinking of. Peter Della Riva. These guys are legends. Almost, I'm not joking, if you go and spend some time there to the level of Jean Béliveau, Richard, I know those are the hockey names, but they got Peter Della Riva's name up in sports bars and certainly on the side of the stadium. They love it. But what I was told by Montreal media, not Herb, other media, was that when the Alouettes were winning, they didn't market because they were winning. And when the winning stopped, they didn't know how to market. Is that a fair assessment? I mean, that's the criticism I heard from in the market. I don't live in Montreal, but they just haven't marketed the team properly. So if you want to talk about Toronto and Vancouver and fan apathy, that's a little bit of a different discussion than Montreal.
And sometimes, is that fair? Sometimes winning is your marketing, too. And there hasn't been a quarterback there since Ricky Foley hit Anthony Calvillo in 2013. And we've seen that here, some of those droughts when the Rough Riders haven't had a quarterback and they've corresponded with a bad period in Rider history. So how long did it take them to replace Ronnie? How long did it take them to replace Ken Austin? They're now trying to see if they can replace Darian Durant.
Right, but not all franchises can win. And this isn't just a CFL thing. Losing teams still need to find a way to fill the building, right? Not every team's going to be able to win, and which is a topic for another time. But Calgary, they can't win more than what they are, and attendance is a problem there. So, Rob, I'll get your... You said your predictions are coming out in Thursday's paper, so I won't ask you to scoop yourself.
But I'm still trying to figure them out.
Well, Saskatchewan and Hamilton Thursday. Who do you think is going to win that one?
I think the Riders will eke out a victory. Hamilton is perceived to be the most powerful team in the East, but that's sometimes like being the best hockey player in Ecuador. So I think Hamilton's coming off an 8-10 year. I don't think they're anything spectacular. I think West is going to beat East 80%, if not more, this season. I think William Powell is going to have a tremendous game, and the Riders will grind out a victory in Steeltown.
Wow. While you're here, Darren, might as well ask you. Riders, yeah. Ticats, who wins?
You know what? I think the Riders will, too.
Wow.
I think, you know, early on in the season, it can be tough to get offenses rolling. And at that point in the year, I like the Riders' defense. So I think
Montreal at Edmonton Friday night. Should we bother?
Oh,
I got Eskimos.
To quote Henry Burris, that'll be a shabockling.
Yeah. It's not going to be
a
close.
Shabockling. Eskimo win. Ottawa at Calgary Saturday. Should we bother? Stampeders home opener.
Next.
Next. And Winnipeg at BC. That might be Canada's game.
Yeah.
Winnipeg Blue Bombers at the BC Lions. I think BC's going to take that one.
I'll take Winnipeg in that one. I think Winnipeg will finish ahead, so I'm going to take them to take the first one.
RV?
I think Mike Riley in his debut with BC is going to have a big game, so I'm picking BC. That's probably good news for Winnipeg, isn't it?
Yeah, okay, right. Hey, before we go off the air, Friday night, 6 o'clock, we'll be dropping from our exclusive video vault our interview, our one-on-one, our sit-down with Wally Buono. Clark's got a clip of the interview to roll now.
You got to have... Leadership has to be willing to put their neck on the line for change. And believe me, change, especially in the CFL, is difficult. Change within our own country is very difficult. And, you know, so God bless Randy for putting his neck on the line for his vision, because, again, you know, we might not see the benefits of it, but I believe in time somebody will see the benefit of it.
That's Wally Buono talking about CFL 2.0 and his thoughts. That may not work, but he said at least they're trying something. RV, thanks for coming in. Let's do it again.
Anytime, Rod. Thanks so much.
They can read your stuff where?
Leaderpost.com. Check out my Twitter account and then read my book, too.
Of course. We all know where to find RV. Yeah, where do you find it? When do we find it?
It's coming out in September. I think it'll be in all major bookstores, so... Not that there's a lot of major bookstores anywhere, but it'll be all over the place.
And I'm getting inundated, Darren, with requests for a Rod Peterson Show mugs, stickers, underwear, you name it. What are you working on there?
Yeah, the shop is coming. The RP shop is on the way. So maybe we'll be able to sell the book out of the shop. Get you,
I'm not much of a negotiator, so it should be a cakewalk for you guys.
Okay, thank you for tuning in, everybody, and we will see you tomorrow on The Rod Peterson Show right here on Facebook Live and rodpeterson.com.
For more Rod Peterson on demand, visit rodpeterson.com.
Thank you for listening to this DuPont Media production, available on all major podcast platforms.